Blog Talk Radio.
Oh,
make it brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Someday, yeah, we'll put it together and we'll get it undone. Someday, when your head is much lighter. Brighter.
Someday, yeah, we'll put it together and we'll get it undone. Someday, yeah, we'll walk in the rays of a beautiful sun. Someday, we'll be brighter.
He's absolutely wonderful. I would like to welcome you to just another episode of Black Power Radio. I'm your host this evening, Sheikh Ali Mem Akbar Abdullah Kareem. We are in the beautiful city of Washington, D.C., a potentially fair city, but nevertheless, living under the umbrella of injustice. We fight for justice from D.C. to San Diego, from Diego back to Brooklyn, from Brooklyn to Atlanta, Atlanta all the way to Houston, Houston straight up and down to Chicago, from Miami all the way to Spokane, Washington. But we're live here tonight on Black Power Radio. We have the most informative radio talk show on the internet or anywhere on 196,940,000 square miles of the planet Earth. We're just happy to be here wiggling around in your ear hole and giving you more of what you actually listen to Black Power Radio for. And we're guaranteed to succeed, and we're right here with you tonight with an episode with our special guest in the house. We hope we got everybody rolling tonight. We have been graced with the pleasure of having our beloved brother, Melvin Farmer, straight out of Los Angeles. And we also have our beloved sister, who is our National Minister of Justice, giving a strong welcome to all of you here at Black Power Radio from coast to coast. And we know we listen to Black Power Radio to gain momentum, to get knowledge, information. We're here to just give you the idealism that you need to succeed in dealing with the opposition. And this is no exaggeration. We're right here, not an ordinary radio station, but we're right here at Black Power Radio, and we're strong, and it's a stronger than the red devil lie at this hour. So we're going to ask you for Black Power, for a strong Black network, and we have a strong Black military to Black Hour call at this hour. So we're right here at Black Power Radio, and we're having some studio difficulty. The last few nights we've been having difficulties dialing into the station, getting any type of momentum, any form of consistency. But under duress, we weather the storm here at Black Power Radio. Right now, they are not lighting up our guests. But nevertheless, the hackers are having their field day with us here at Black Power Radio. But I talk to a lot of radio hosts, and many of the Black stations are experiencing technical difficulty and every other kind of difficulty you can potentially or possibly imagine. And it's beyond anything that I've seen in radio, TV communications. But nevertheless, we have consistency here at Black Power Radio. What legacy are we leaving our children? And we work for the continuity of the best of our ancestors. What I have done in my research is found the best of our inertia and the best of our networking has been done in the area of Black Revolution. And not just starting with Nat Turner, there were many other revolutionaries, but Nat Turner earned that distinguished honor. He was a prophet for the white man and a prophet for the black man. And the fact that they all gave their confessions to the Honorable Nat Turner. And we feel honored at this hour to bring you Black Power Radio under duress and under all types of technical difficulties. We're still rolling. Just like hot sauce. We're rolling in the hot sauce against the enemy. We got no low test. We pump in high test. Let's see. Are you able to hear me, Dr. Truth Bay? Are you able to hear us? Let's see.
Yes,
Someone
I am.
Oh, you're right here. Yes, ma'am. You're able to hear us. And do you have our beloved brother and special guest tonight, Melvin Farmer? Is he tuned on your line or yet another line?
Yes. He is
on your line.
Mr. Farmer, is your presence here?
Pleasure. And put note that we do have our brothers and guests. Abdullah has a network out there. At 9:30 or so, we will have the Empress bring us some pieces on Stephen Biko, the revolutionary of South Africa. And we're just going to move this thing as best we can. We're going to let Dr. Truth Bay open up. And note that you have on board Brother Abdullah Talib Bay and Brother Shemis in Brooklyn. So you can go right ahead, Truth Bay, and open up and give us some clues as to what you're doing in L.A. and who you're doing it with, my.
Well, where do we start on this one? Well, thank you, peace and black power to all on this evening. It is a couple more weeks till this year is out. And the burning question remains, what legacy do we want to leave for our young people? As we see that year after year, there is really no change for black Americans. There is no productivity. Incarceration is still unjust. We are still overrepresented in the homeless population. So where is it that we're going? What is this genocide that's happening upon us that we could actually reverse these stages? But one great thing that I've reconnected with is a native of Los Angeles, and not a regular native, but someone that's really, that knows his way around. And it's a journey. And I'm humbly grateful to have Mr. Melvin Farmer, right here with us, in which he can tell us what legacy that he wants to live with the youth. So, Mr. Farmer, if you're in the building, please welcome to Black Power Radio. Peace and Black Power. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing fine, and peace and blessings to everybody, and free them all. And I want to thank you for having me on Black Power Radio. Thank you.
Right on. Well, we are grateful to have you here. And if you haven't seen many interviews before, we're not going to dwell along what your history is, per se, but we want you to tell us exactly, for those who are not from L.A., the significance of what you have done here, particularly with Chris. I don't know. What's the best way to ask you these questions, Mel? How do you want to open this show here, sir?
Well, I just tell them a little bit about my history, then we'll just go down the road.
Right on. So let's start from there. You were born in Mississippi, am I correct?
No, I was born in Los Angeles. My mother was from Saratoga, Mississippi. My father was out of Memphis. In fact, I was down there when Martin Luther King got killed. The bar case. So I got a deep, rich history. The South have used the outhouse before, jumped over pigs as a youth, but I'm born and raised in Los Angeles.
Right on. And so tell us, where did you begin and where is your humble beginnings? What's the significance of 83rd and Western? Tell us
I grew up on the east side, which was the Charlie Bird, the Ella Fitzgeralds, the Dorothy Dandridge's. That was where they was going, the 40s and the 50s. The east side was popping. And then basically we started integrating to the west side in Los Angeles. That's where 83rd and Western was. And that's when I moved on 83rd and Western, changing from junior high from the 7th to 8th grade. And I met a girl and her brother in 8th grade. First girl I met at Horace Mann Junior High. And her brother was Tookie.
Mm-hmm.
Tookie Williams. And the park that I used to play recreations at, baseball, football, basketball, I was the number one ranked player at 13, 14, 15 years old in L.A. But I'm also watching Tookie now transform into what is known today as the Crips. I'm an original member of the Tookie and his disciples. We are his disciples when we were 14. About 15, I have co-founded an organization, Street Gangs. That's the difference, not an organization, called the mm-hmm. A-Train Gangster Clips.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are 51 years later, and we're still talking about something where we were naive and everybody in the world has been deceived. So
yeah.
The part of what's
Right, right. And can you elaborate a little bit on gangs per se? Because people need to understand the real reason why it even developed, how it organically developed, and really what was the main purpose? And between the Bloods and the Crips, how did that really become such a national opposition?
Well, we've always had gangs all across America in these marginalized communities, so that's nothing new. Like when I grew up in the 60s, you had the Slossers, the Businessmen, Manchester Park Boys, and so on and so forth. But they also had the Civil Rights era going on as well, the Black Panthers, the Us, the Fleety Grongos, Hugo Pinnells, Geronimo Pratt, George Jackson, Soledad. I got to witness all that. Patty Hearst kidnapping, SLA, St. Hugh, all that's popping. So,
yes, as a matter of fact, let's stop right there for a second. Can you tell us a little about the Civil Rights Movement in that era? Did you face some direct discrimination, so to speak, growing up? Segregation?
Yeah, when we moved to the West Side, as I had said earlier, it was basically the equivalent of moving back into the South. Because when we moved over there, it was all white folks. Every school over there named after white, everything over there named after a white person. So these were black families, two parents working hard. The oldest people you might see is Tookie now. And at that time, I'm 13. They no more than 17. He only lived at 25. So all those was the oldest you'll see, Tookie, Jamel, and all the ones that you hear read about as original OGs. So it was, we were integrating. I don't went from having the sleep, eat syrup sandwiches to where I don't move to the West Side where we got miniature golf, theaters, giant slide, trampolines, baseball stadium, Soul Train, gang banging, and pop locking, 71, 72, when that was coming. So, yeah, I felt discrimination in eighth grade after I had got suspended out of city schools. They sent me to the white schools. And the first day I went there, some white boys, they was lagging quarters. Well, all of us was lagging up against the wall. And the white boy came and snatched everybody quarter. He didn't snatch mine, but he snatched the other white boy. And so when they went and told the principal, the white boy said, I'm the one that took the coins and robbed them. And I got kicked out of school my first day going to
Wow. And what were the repercussions, though? Did they find out who really did it and apologize?
My mama didn't even believe me when I told her I didn't do it. To this day, she still believes that. Uh-huh. Yeah,
wow.
That's how I was back then. At 14, how the police were to us coming up. I was walking down the alley. This is when they used to have dirt roads with green grass going where the tires don't make the track. And I was walking, coming off Hoover Street. And they pulled me over in the alley and told me to put my hands on the hood. That's when the car hot, running hot, so you'll move there, whoop your ass or something. Old trick to do back then. So anyway, they went and frisked me, patted me down, and then told me, nigga, run. It's dark out. They told me to run, take off running. But I knew if I'd have ran, there wasn't no doubt in my mind they'd have shot me and killed me. So I just dropped to my knees, put my hands behind my ear, and told them, you got to kill me right here. They'll know my knees dug into this dirt. And he kicked me right in my back.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That I can tell. And how old were you when that happened?
Probably 15.
15. That can set the stage for how you view the police and basically blatant racism. That could be traumatic to any child.
We didn't look at it like that because we would fight police. I don't think, see, that's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
They can get it too. So that was fair in the streets when we were coming up. You only getting 2 years for a murder, period. I don't care if it's the police. They couldn't try us. We 14, 15. We didn't take it. We come back. They killed my other partner when the SLA shot him at the Hollywood Bowl when they was looking and hunting for Black and the Black Panthers and them, Gen Q and them, pulling everybody over. And they jumped on the hood and killed him. But that was my partner, Sidewinder's brother. So the one that was in the car, he ended up shot and paralyzed, and the police has got no more different than the riots in 1990 with Reginald Denny. That's us, too. So
mm-hmm.
we got a long history of encounters, and it probably started back then. We don't talk about it. We about it.
Right, right. And that's one thing to either to really live the life or to portray it as you see in music and videos, how it's really like. Can you tell us a little bit about your upbringing? There was a significant story that touched me concerning the background of coming from a family of domestic violence of your father and your mother. What significant turning point happened for you to confront your dad on how he was treating your mother? If you tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, I was 15 then. And I hear my mama was a model, real pretty. She had me at 15, so she under 30 at the max. The numbers add up. Anyway, I hear my mama crying and hollering. And then I hear something like fist slapping on skin. And then I realized it was my daddy hit my mother. So I had a 38, and we used to have a little thing where you go in down the hall. It was a three-bedroom house back then. We was in a house in 72. And when I realized he was hitting my mother, and it was my mama hollering, I waited for him in the hallway and pulled him in just nice and slow and put that gun right up on his heart. And I told him if I ever hear my mama holler like that again when you hit her, I'm gonna have to lose it. And I walked away, he walked away, and he never touched my mother again. In fact, she didn't even know why he quit hitting her when she was 30 till I told her on my 60th birthday. So she didn't know that for 45 years, and she said I couldn't figure it out. But yeah, that was the significance with that.
Wow, that was a turning point right there, and to this day, huh? Well, that I would inspire for anyone that when they see a loved one go through that, the turning point of how sometimes you got to go to the extremes and let them know not to abuse women. Now, where was your career as far as what path, as far as the streets concerned? When did the real trouble begin? Let's say during the crack cocaine era in the early 80s or so. When did the real gang formation start for those who don't really know, who are playing gangster but don't know the real story on how organically they formed in L.A.?
Well, we're not talking about gangsters. We're talking about the Crips. I'm a Crip.
Right.
When I say that, that don't mean we out here active. But I'm in a community called Death Valley. Let's get that straight. No more different Chicago, New York, out of state in D.C., all over. And you got them all the same. But so I'm talking about the origins of the Crips to where they is from now. So what I'm talking about to where they stand today. Globally.
Right. What are their beginnings?
So the beginning was on the west side, the Panthers and all them had been getting them for trade. Let's get that straight. The Crips were dormant. They were nothing but a street gang, not a organized crime. It's a big difference. Organized crime, when it comes to street gangs, you have three gangs that are classified as street gangs: Crips and Bloods, Hells Angels, and the Mexican Mafia. But two of them, when they get into trouble, because they are organized, they go to the federal court and be tried in federal court. As a street gang, Crips and Bloods, Gangster Disciples, Vice Lords, GDs, whatever you want to call them, they lack organization and structure and usually commit street-level crimes, selling dope, murder, and these type of things. That's the difference with a street gang. We're a street gang. We don't have no structure. There is no chain of command. And that's the difference. So Raymond Washington, founder of the East Side, took the West Side, James Compton, and Mack Thomas. Watts. Those are the four areas that the original Crips started before the gangs. You hear the 60s, the 8 Trades, the Hoovers, 5-5, Blood. They only had East Side, West Side, and Compton Crips. This is where the Crips started.
Okay.
And, but how I got involved is I was playing sports. A lot of people don't know I was the number one basketball player, like I said, 13, 14, 15 on my way.
Mm-hmm.
But we playing at other parks. You read the story about where they knew we were from St. Andrews Park, and we only was 13 or 14. And they grown dudes, 17, 18, 19 on up, tried to jump on us because of that. And from there, it just gradually went from the corners, from the courts to the corners. And that's when I started getting into it with Tookie Dam, and we started our rise to where it is now.
I see. Now, you went to attended multiple funerals. What was the most significant death that really made you shift or made you think? What was the most prolific event or chain of events during your life that really had an impact on you?
No murder has had an impact on me, young lady. That's the first thing. When you sign up for this, we didn't come into this game where we could be a rapper, entertainer, get jumped in, get co-signed in, sign a check and get in, sell dope and get in, shoot dice and get in. We were pure game bangers.
Mm-hmm.
So we signed up for this game. Although we didn't know what we were doing, but there's rules for this game. It's what you're seeing now ain't the same way we come in. So now, if you want to ask what was the most important murder that made an impact in the Crips history, which
yeah.
made the violence that exists today, because they could have been croquet players, they could have been the Boy Scouts of America, but
NBA.
They came to be known for killing. That's the first thing, and it's a reason why. The Robert Ballou murder happened March 1972, because I was still 15. And Soul Train gang banging and pop locking was coming out. Soul Train had moved here from Chicago in 71. They were on Sunset and Van Ness, the Metropolitan Media. That's where they filmed Soul Train, Jameda Joe Freeman.
Soul Train, that changed everybody's life at that age, at that time.
Yeah, you're right. But we get to be there because we right there. They ain't nothing but teenagers from our school.
That's
so
right.
We right in the mix. You got Fredberry,
right.
You got the lockers coming out, the pop locking, and you got gangbang, 71. All of them started at the same time.
That's
so,
right.
We both gangbanging and pop locking. when that was going on. But when they first had their first Soul Train dance, everybody talking about it. This before Wattstack. That's another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, everybody talking about it. And the Crips are dormant, but they dominant. They are formidable on these streets. They're controlling the city, particularly the areas I mentioned. So anyway, a young man named Robert Ballou got killed by the West, some of the West Side Crips, Sam Cunningham, Ricardo Sim, Judson Baycott, and two juveniles. So when Robert Ballou was slain, beat to death, another coat was taken by a guy he was trying to help, a friend of his, and he ended up getting killed. That is the case, the murder, and anybody, you can Google it right now, the Robert Ballou murder at the Hollywood Palladium. That catapulted the Crips into being in the newspaper nationally or locally and state for the first time in history. The Crips were announced to the city of Los Angeles as a threat. Then the next thing that really was significant was Wattstack, the one y'all see. I was there with Tookie Blackie, who would eventually end up telling on him in court, which would get him executed. Rest in peace, homie. And we was there. But if you know the history, although they were here for police brutality, the Watts riots and everything, their number one concern for security were the Crips.
Okay, so I'll call in around 9:45.
Uh-huh.
All right. Power to the people.
Power to the people.
Yeah, so that was actually Empress Bilal. Sorry, she was just chiming in. Go ahead, Mr. Farmer. Mm-hmm. Melvin, you still there?
I'm here.
Oh, yes. Continue on.
Oh, so that was the most significant thing. And then that murder happened, and that's what started the Crips to be known. Now, when the drug came out, that's when people could start, and the pure gangbanging stopped, to where drug dealers, the Harry O's, no more different than you see all these rappers attaching themselves to some type of gang, whether it be here, New Orleans, Atlanta, Chicago, New York, Florida, Texas. They always got to get that street cred with this bravado, like this is something to glorify. That's one thing I don't do. I don't glorify. Mm-hmm. And actually don't even like to talk, but I have to because we get so mixed up. I heard you talk about social media, and I can understand exactly what's going on. A coon and a buffoon will be all over the internet, but those that got their boots to the ground, when the camera's not around, they're going to shadow you, make sure, interrupt your messages, and so forth. I go through that same problem right now. On all platforms to where I get shadowed, monitored for simple comments. So it's real out here in the field.
Yes, it's real. And that's what we say, Facebook activists and real boots to the ground. It's a big difference. And we appreciate you right now wanting to leave a positive legacy for our youth. Now, what is the title as a gang interventionist? How do you feel about that title, and what does that really mean? Is it something that you think it really describes on what we're trying to really do to turn things around, or what's your thought process on that, being labeled as an intervention?
We were, not to say I always say we, but we were in the first gang intervention program in 1976 called the Long Table. In fact, Rosie Greer created that program in 1976. They gave him money after that Sirhan, after Kennedy got killed. They loved him out here. But that program ended with a murder of one of the guys went there, which led to a fisticuff and a gang fight, and that's how that closed. But now, gang intervention, you got intervention and you got prevention. Let's distinguish that.
Mm-hmm.
Prevention is like when they come and Smokey the Bear come to the auditorium for fifth graders and tell you only you can prevent forest fires.
Yes.
That's prevention. That's
yes,
prevention.
Right.
Intervention, you never could really, when you get to the heart of what intervention was, you have to take the word of those. Like, for instance, let me give you an example. True story. You get a call that on a Saturday morning at 11:33 in another rival game. Oh, by the way, this is right after L.A. gang tonight when Nipsey got killed, and it's the Rolling 60 that I'm talking to. We're
mm-hmm.
just calling them the Hatfields. That's Nipsey
mm-hmm.
Hussle. And
wow.
I'm a gangster crip. I'm a McCoy. So we got a McCoy telling a Hatfield, hey, your Hatfield don't just kill the McCoy, and I thought we were cool. So I say, which Hatfield? And they say, Bopsy Bam. And so I say, well, let me call my Hatfield and see what he got to say. But they telling me, no, we need to talk to him now. In other words, we need him now. This
mm-hmm.
is an invention. I can name a lot of them that you won't hear about. So anyway, I called him, and he told me, no, what happened, homie? I told him I had a gun on me because he had on a hat. Out here, colors don't matter. Them hats and them insignia, that means something every 10 blocks. And he say, I told him I ain't tripping because he messing around with a McCoy, one of the girls. So they went on pressing him, 18, 19, there was three of them. And he moved up on that corner. The Hatfield killed him. So now I say, okay, let me call them back. I say, my Hatfield say that your McCoy, after he told him don't press him, came up there. He say, yeah, I can see him doing that. They talk bad to an OG. And I say, well, why don't you do this? Give me 72 hours and let me call you back. Because I figured if they were some survivors, they're going to tell their parents, which all of them do, what really happened at that age. They're going to tell them who did and everything, and they know they're going to tell. Sure enough, he got caught on a Sunday, one day later, booked. I got his booking number, called him and say, now, there ain't no need in coming over here shooting in reprisal. The nigga that did it in jail, the brother dead, let it go. That's how that go. Or I can tell another time. They call me the same crew. Police trying to start something this time. After the 100 days, 100 nights, things going along real smooth. And I get a call. Hey, man, we just found a body laying up behind this garage. And it got gang writing on it where it say, hey, Trey talking this shit, basically. But they say, we didn't hear no gunshots. And the victim is a Mexican. And I say, well, my niggas, the Hatfields, they don't got enough gas to do a drive-by, let alone stop it right on the wall. I say, that don't sound right. I say, I think the police did that. And sure enough, we come to agreement. Because there wasn't no gunshots, no, the police had dumped the body. That's
right.
Intervention.
Right.
You can't go and now what you can do at force on the state level, because you got, as you know, the makeup here when it comes to the surrounding terrain, you got sheriff when you call sentry, that's county, and you got city. Because those two have different intervention programs and both of them have rival gangs, and each got Hatfield, state, and city, and then you got the McCoys county, they never get to talk to bring peace among, and never use the word peace, because they done lost so many lives their loved ones, they'll never be at peace the rest of their life. So I like to use the term fall back. Just fall back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're more receptive to that as opposed to peace. They don't like that word on these streets, the word
right.
peace. But they will fall back. Just fall back, man. You ain't got to socialize. Just stay in your lane. And that's pretty much what's really going on right now, to be quiet as kept. Everybody's falling back. They're falling off social media. And they try to get back because they're really in a struggle where they're starting to realize gentrification taking place. And I can say that they do got enough sense, the youngsters, to realize that, and they're gobbling up these buildings up down Western Corridor, Crenshaw, and so forth. I can't say that.
Yes. And so that's why you mentioned that word peace. So we're going to take a couple of questions from our listening audience. Right before that, can you tell us what type of legacy, since that's the theme of one of the themes of tonight's show, what legacy or what advice would you say to your peers that we want to leave for our young people in 2024? As you say, since things are falling away,
my legacy and what I'm trying to do, and I can say this for a lot of people across America, particularly those that have went from a tax burden to taxpayers to where they changed their life and sometimes ostracized to where they passed to hamper their future. I give back to where what I've always been, a giver. I'm not a plotter. I'm a planner. I've always tried to protect this community, have protected this community. I've never actually been to jail, and I've been to jail 65 times, 33 years spent in prison, but I ain't been to jail for no black-on-black violence ever.
That part.
Yeah, that
part. That's
yeah.
Absurd. So I need to understand
that. I go take it, but at the end of the day, I want to leave a legacy to where I'm giving back to the community. I'm helping the homeless, getting those that are oppressed, and try to teach the youth with truth to the youth and the adults and those alike that if I can do it and others can do it, we don't want our past to be your future. And if you just sit and listen, because listening is learning and history is knowledge, I want to say that, hey, I want to make my mother proud. I want to make our community proud. I want to make us as black more stronger and prouder. So that's what my
very well said. Very well said. You bring a tear to my eye, Melvin. I really am proud of you and honored to have you on our show. You definitely are an example for others. So we're going to open the phone line to relinquish the line back to our host, Shaky Mama, for anyone that has any questions. Or comments for the legendary Melvin Farmer right here on Black Power Radio, original OG Crip member, right, that is leaving a legacy for our people in a positive way. Thank you, Melvin, and stand by. Shaky my mic for?
That's peace and power to the people. Are we clear from, are we live on Black Power Radio? You can hear
That's
me clearly
right.
now, Dr. True?
Yes,
okay.
We can.
Well, we are proud to have our guest tonight and all of the things that have happened in his life and all of those great ones that have come through his network in Los Angeles, from Watts to the Compton to the Inglewood, from Crenshaw Black to, from Napogo to No-Go, from Sepulveda to the San Fernando Valley and Black again, from Sunset Boulevard to Beverly Hills. You know, we're right here with you on Black Power Radio. But with all of those great experiences that you had, I'm just thinking if you would highlight one that you would find remarkable that you share with the audience that you know happened in L.A. that couldn't happen anywhere else. Give me one of those examples. It had to be L.A., not New York, not Chicago, not, you know, Atlanta or any of those major conglomerates and major cities. What went on in L.A. that couldn't go on anywhere else? And
I got
in
you in with me, man.
Sorry, because as soon as you called me and hung up, the call went out.
Oh, it did. It went out.
All right, can you reach the line, Brother Khalid?
Thank you.
One of your calls went out? Okay. You're still there with us, Brother Melvin Farmer? Can you still hear me?
Yes, sir. What did you ask me? What is one thing in Los Angeles?
An example of something that would happen in L.A. Couldn't happen in New York. Couldn't happen anywhere but L.A. In a particular incident.
You'll say the peace treaty?
No. What can happen is that doesn't happen frequently is you can get killed in L.A. by just crossing the street, just by having a hat, just by standing. And I've been to Chicago where they got tough streets, New York, Brooklyn, Queens, all over, all the boroughs, Atlanta. I went to prison there, went to jail in Florida, stayed in Washington, D.C. But it's a big difference with Los Angeles. And I'll tell you exactly. If you want to get technical about it, I got a better example, and this will shut it down. There is no other gang in California but Crips and Blood. We're in every state. Mm-hmm. There is no GDs here. They are here, maybe from there, but there is nothing but Crips and Bloods in the state of California. You can't do that nowhere else where there's not Crips and Blood. There is no other gang that sets up in the state of California. That's the difference.
Right on.
There's no IQ Wells, no gangster disciples and all of that. But I want to open the lines up. I have Brother Kevin DeWall. I think he's out there. KWD, are you out there in North Carolina? He may have a question. And there's a couple more. We got the line slightly filled. But you're there with us, KW, and talk black to Brother Melvin is out on the west side, and Brother K. DeWalt is in North Carolina. And you can talk black to Brother Melvin Farmer, one of the legendary brothers out of L.A., and you can talk black to him.
Most definitely, black power, most definitely. I see the
black
brother.
Black
power, most definitely I understand the narrative we face, you know, as black people. I most definitely honor all these brothers out here that's doing the work and putting in the right on this mission that we've been put on to make sure that we give our people the right narrative about who we are as a people, the right narrative of what we need to do in order for us to get in the right positions to be a nation for ourselves. And unless we present our own narrative for ourselves, we can't never move forward. So I most definitely respect what the brother was saying. I came in at the last minute, but it's always a black power thing. And it's always going to be that from the day I die. So our black power always to this whole nation that we need to represent for all the right reasons. And that's our narrative, doing the right thing for us as a people. Black power.
Right on. Right on.
Brother K. DeWalt, never out of season, always giving the right reason. And if you want to give a response, I'll shift to Philly. If Brother Melvin Farmer has a response on that note from North Carolina, would you send your message right on black out there from L.A., brother? Melvin?
I just left North Carolina. In fact, I had a lady running for mayor in Greenville and another one in South Carolina that was running for mayor. So I'm very familiar with our folks. In fact, we was doing a Gloves Up, Guns Down tour, where one of eight state tour, where one of the places was Greenville. We was also with Barbara G. Gaskin, a phenomenal gubernatorial candidate. In fact, she'll be running the Democratic Party. Just asked her to run for Congress this coming campaign year. And it's also important for us to use that ballot, not so much on the national level, but if we want change, we have to start at the local elected officials, the way it don't matter if you're Democrat or Republican, from Waterhole, nothing's changed. So I think it's imperative for us to get out of segregation and bondage, particularly in these inner cities where one side of the street could get you killed. Just that simple. And we have to be able to make a situation to where we as blacks should not have to be afraid of one another. We got everybody that kill me because of the color of my skin. But blacks only kill each other because of the areas that we stay in. We have to cut that out. We're creating
Cut it out.
My. And we want to try to pick this thing up and sling it to the curb and run up here to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And we've got our brother that's always on with us, and he's right there in the city of Philadelphia. And his name is Brother Abdullah Talib Bey. And if he had a question or comment on what Brother Melvin Farmer has said so far, or just give that greeting or whatever shout out you can give from Philly, you're live right there with Melvin Farmer. Come on, Brother Talib, out of Philadelphia. Power to the people.
Peace, brother.
Peace.
How you doing? Peace.
I have Fakuba Ali with me.
I have Matakubu Ali El Bey with me as well. Peace. Peace, brother. Farmer.
Peace.
Great, brother. Great work that you're doing. All right, Matakubu, you have a question for Brother Farmer?
No, I don't.
All right, Pacola, you have a question for Brother Farmer?
I do not. Thanks for the information.
All right. She said, thank you for the information, brother, and keep up the great work.
Are they out of Philadelphia?
Matakubu is out of New York. And,
I want to put a spotlight on Philadelphia. If Philadelphia and Meek Mill's now, this go unnoticed. But they did, Meek Mill's had a bill passed about probation and the restraints and stuff, how it was freed up kids. So I want to give a shout out to Meek Mill. I thank that boy, whatever his name with Million Dollar Game, whatever him and his sidekick name, they all were responsible for putting the bill together.
The probation reform law, right?
Right.
Right.
And I would want, we're going to try two things that I'll fit to introduce the legislation in the form of reparations, but from a back door. I think because of the conditions that we as blacks in these, once again, marginalized communities, are no more different than when you go to war to where you've been traumatized, dead bodies, drug addiction, violence, mental health. So I want to introduce a bill called ICESS, I-C-S-S acronym, Inner City Stress Syndrome. Those are the conditions that I've been up under to where I know I need help, and I'm quite sure other ones, from kids stepping over dead bodies, going to school, their mother out hoeing like it's the best thing, going their daddy's a penniless pimp. And, you know, that's another thing. My culture, when I was growing up, I was not too far from being a slave. This culture here of crackheads and drug dealers. So our upbringing ain't the same, and they want our upbringing where they compare my era when they say, oh, geez, the way it looked like, hey, we ain't your mama or your daddy. So I don't want to be understanding that terminology, the OGs should have shown us. No, I don't know no real OGs. Those are opportunity givers that have actually ever told a kid the gang bang and do all that. They do more of that on social media, internet gang banging and verbal gymnastics than they actually are doing on the street. So that image,
I like that.
That ain't what's going on these streets. They couldn't care about an actor, rapper, entertainer. They robbed them for practice.
That's right. But I really do appreciate that I see.
Thank you.
Hello?
Oh, we're right here with you. I think Dr. Coupe will be plugging back in. I don't know, something that went wrong at the switchboard. And we're definitely going with the continuity and pick up where our brother came back in, wherever he left off. We're trying to pick it back up. And we're having some studio difficulties, but nevertheless, it is what it is today. And we are just thankful to all of you all. I want you to just chime in, Brother DeWalt, for a second while I go back into the studio. Can you handle it? Go right ahead, Brother DeWalt. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm on here, Black Power. Can you hear me? Black Power, brother, can you hear me? Black Power, can you hear me, brother? They're having difficulties with this. Black Power, brother, can you hear me? Inner city stress syndrome. Most definitely in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm going to call back in here.
Can everybody, can you hear us, Brother DeWalt? Let's see. Dr. Truth Bay, are you still there with Melvin?
Yes.
Are you there, Brother Melvin?
Yes, sir.
We should be all live. I'm working to see if I can merge it back in. The hackers attack us. When we put in any pertinent information on the airways, they will let me see if I can add at least another one, add Talib while he's talking as well.
Okay.
Yes, everybody live on Black Power Radio.
All right.
Be live. Okay. I'm working on the studio, but you all are live, still live on air, Black Power.
Black Power. We're just finishing up on some of the bills. He was just discussing about Meek Mill, Senate Bill 838, I believe, that just passed.